Well, if you notice in my bio, there wasn't any list of the number of publications that I've produced, like in previous speakers, because that list is pretty short for me. I am not a researcher, I'm a clinician, so I feel like a very small fish in a very big pond here today with looking at the credentials of the other speakers that I've shared with you so far today. But so my approach to this today is going to be kind of from that clinical standpoint of I vaccinate a lot of cows. I set up vaccine programs for producers. I teach veterinary students about setting up vaccine programs for producers. So that's going to be kind of the background where we're going to approach this from today as far as the approach that we'll take. It's not coming from me as a researcher with a bunch of data of my own to show you. So that's kind of where this slide comes from. My goal in this was to try to make this as... Is that really loud? That sounds really loud to me. Is that okay? Okay. I don't want to be blasting your ears out if it is. I try to set aside my own personal opinions and biases as far as vaccines and stuff go in preparing this, and really didn't have any influence from any pharmaceutical companies in how this was put together, and just to try to make this as non-biased a presentation to you as possible, because I know we all have our own biases and opinions about which vaccines are better than others and different situations. So try to put all that aside and look specifically at peer-reviewed literature that's out there available and see what that would show us about the question about immunity as well as abortion risk related to vaccine use. I need to apologize to you. I didn't get all of my materials together in time to get them to the proceedings. So if you would like a copy of proceedings for this presentation, please just send me an email at that address, and I'd be more than happy to send that to you later on. So I apologize for that inconvenience. So my goal today is kind of to briefly, and I say briefly because there's a lot of literature about vaccine use and there's a lot more than we can cover in 30 minutes of a presentation. So we're going to try to make a brief overview of it, kind of make some points, but we're certainly not going to cover every research study that's out there in the literature. But we're going to look at the impacts of viral vaccine use, and we're going to focus primarily or really completely on bovine herpes virus 1 or IBR and BVD virus. Those are the ones that we are mainly concerned about when we're developing cow herd vaccine programs, and those are also the agents that are the ones that are most concerned from a safety standpoint. So we're going to focus our talk on those. We're going to focus on peer-reviewed literature. I tried to stay within about the last 15 years as much as possible just to keep things as current as possible because products change and different things change as far as what's available on the market, so try to make it as applicable to the current situation that we're in today. And tried to focus on research papers or research projects that were utilizing products that are commercially available now, just to make it more applicable to you in your everyday practice or operation. Just going to list a couple vaccines, or just some abbreviations that we'll use as we go through here, just because it'll show up on slides, just so you know what they are, and it just saves some space on the slides. So the typical modified live virus, killed virus vaccines. BHV-1 is IBR, infectious bovine rhinotracheitis virus, BVD, and then there's a couple studies that included lepto in their vaccine program, so that might show up on a few slides just so you know what it is. And then we'll talk quite a bit about the idea of persistent infection with BVD virus, and if you're not familiar with what that means or how that works, I'd be happy to visit with you about that this evening. Don't really have time to cover that today, but if that's an unfamiliar concept to you, find me this evening, and I'd be more than happy to, or at the break, and I'd be more than happy to visit with you about what that means. It's a very important concept, and it is one of the primary reasons that we vaccinate cows for BVD, is trying to prevent the fetal persistent infection. So it's very important to understand that. So if you have any questions, just let me know. And then we'll talk some about just fixed time AI. This is not a AI or synchronization presentation, but many of the protocols use fixed time AI, so we'll just use that abbreviation. So the first question I asked myself when I was thinking putting this together is, you know, what is the real evidence for the need for vaccination? If we have a concern about safety of using these vaccines in breeding animals, do we need to really be using them at all? Is there a need to do that as far as any vaccine of any type? And found a couple of fairly interesting papers out of South America, out of Brazil, that were very large scale kind of field studies where they compared reproductive success in animals with various vaccine histories. And this first one is in beef cattle. Over 12,000 animals were included from multiple different operations in Brazil. And they looked at the effects of vaccination against herpes virus and BVD, and this one also included lepto, in cattle that had, or looked at pregnancy rate and then also pregnancy loss between 30 and 120 days of gestation, in cattle that had various histories of vaccination. Some farms used no vaccine, had no history of vaccine use of any kind. Some only used lepto vaccine, and then some they utilized viral vaccines as well. And what they found was that the vaccination, compared to no vaccination at all, reduced pregnancy loss. So there was no challenge, and this was just a field study, so these cattle were under their normal production conditions, and they just vaccinated some, when these herds that had no history of vaccination, vaccinated some of those and not some of the others, and found that the ones that had gotten vaccinated had a reduced pregnancy loss compared to unvaccinated controls. And then they also found that vaccine reduced pregnancy loss in primipares or first calf heifers compared to no vaccination or just using lepto vaccine alone. So including the viral vaccines reduced pregnancy loss in those first calf heifers compared to using no vaccine at all or just using a lepto vaccine. And they didn't see a significant effect in older cows, mature cows, in that study. And then the last one there, they administered two doses of vaccine. And what the vaccine they used in the study was Cattle Master. It's a product that contains a chemically altered IBR and a killed BVD. And they gave two doses of that vaccine prior to fixed time AI, with the second dose being given at the beginning of the synchronization protocol. And that improved their pregnancy rate compared to vaccination before and then again after fixed time AI. So giving two rounds of the vaccine prior to fixed time AI improved pregnancy rate compared to giving one dose before and another dose after the AI episode. So it showed, you know, pretty good evidence that the vaccination in some form will improve reproductive success compared to no vaccination at all. And then this other study is from Brazil as well. It was in dairy cattle, and it involves four different experiments with over 3,500 animals included in it. And it's a very similar setup. They compared the effects of vaccination with BVD and IBR and lepto compared to no vaccination following fixed time AI. So these cows were all submitted to fixed time AI. And they found that vaccination reduced pregnancy loss compared to no vaccination at all, and then vaccination prior to fixed time AI, and the time frame was fairly variable. It was, if I remember correctly, somewhere they got two doses of vaccine, but then they waited 15 to up to 135 days post-vaccination to breed the cows, depending on their production, where they were in their production phase. And those vaccinations provided an effect of improved pregnancy rates compared to no vaccination at all. And then another way that we can look at the value of vaccination in general is just to look at multiple challenge trials that are out in the literature now. We're going to look at several of those as we go through this talk. But if we compare vaccinate groups to control groups that are unvaccinated in multiple trial studies with all different types of vaccines, there's a clear difference in reproductive performance in the vaccinates versus the controls. And these are all going to be some kind of a challenge study where the animals are directly challenged in some way. So we know that in that case, and many of those are going to challenge animals. Some are going to be in, by an unnatural route, by intravenous injection or injecting virus up the nose. But many of them, especially with BVD, are going to be through natural exposure. They're going to expose pregnant animals or animals that are going to be inseminated to animals that are persistently infected with BVD and are shedding virus. And that's the most natural way and the most common way that the virus is spread among cattle. So it's a natural route of exposure. And even in those studies, there's a very definite difference between vaccines and controls and reproductive performance. So vaccine has value, significant value, over no vaccination at all in terms of reproductive performance under a variety of circumstances. So then we get into the debate about should we use a modified live vaccine or should we use a killed vaccine. And I hope no one has any tomatoes or hard sharp objects that can throw at me out there. I said I'm going to try to keep my opinions and biases out as much as possible and just kind of show you what's in the literature. Historically, we've considered as an industry and what we teach students and students learn in immunology is that regardless of we're talking about cattle vaccines or dog vaccines or human vaccines, Modified live vaccines tend to produce a quicker, more robust, and longer-lasting immune response compared to killed vaccines, because that organism replicates in the host animal, more closely mimics a natural infection, produces a stronger, longer-lasting immune response, is the theory. And because of that replication of the virus in the host animal, a booster vaccine is not necessarily required. It may be needed in some cases, maybe a good idea, but not necessarily required. When we talk about killed vaccines, then, well, theoretically they're safer than modified live vaccines because we're not injecting that animal with a potentially infectious agent. Everything's been inactivated in the killed vaccine, so there's nothing live in there. But then they require a booster on initial administration. So anytime that we're going to give killed vaccines of any sort, or a toxoid like a blackleg vaccine to an animal, the first time they get those, they have to have a booster vaccine within 3 to 4 weeks after the first vaccine, or we're really not accomplishing much. That first injection just primes the immune system, doesn't do much for producing a protective immune response, and then the second dose is going to provide that protective immune response. So that's one disadvantage to using toxoids or killed vaccines. But my question is, you know, this is sort of dogma in industry and what veterinary students are taught, but what is the real evidence for these differences in efficacy between the two types of vaccines? And if you go into the literature and look and try to find studies that compare killed vaccine versus modified live vaccine directly together in the same study, they're very difficult to find. I managed to find one paper that did that. That's the one presented here by Rodning and others. And they compared three different commercial vaccines plus a non-vaccinated control group for protection against natural exposure to PIBVD cattle. So they vaccinated different groups of animals, then exposed them during pregnancy to animals that were shedding BVD virus, and then measured the development of persistent infection in the fetuses that those cows were carrying during the exposure. So they had an unvaccinated control group, they had a group that got Bovishield, a group that got Pyramid, and a group that got Virushield 6. The Bovishield and Pyramid are modified live products, and the Virushield is an inactivated product. And so they measured viremia in these, meaning that they were able to take blood samples from those animals and isolate live virus circulating around in the system of those cattle, and they were able to find those in every one of the controls. None of the Bovishield group and one of the Pyramid group, and there was no difference between those two. And then half of the Virushield cattle had a viremia at some point during the multiple points at which they were measuring viremia. And then when those calves were born, they checked those calves for persistent infection with BVD and found that every one of the controls, every one of the calves born to a control animal that was non-vaccinated but subsequently exposed, developed what was born with persistent BVD infection. None of the modified live group calves had any PI calves, and then 2 out of 18 of the Virushield heifers delivered persistently infected calves. And so all three of the vaccine groups were different than the control group. So all of the vaccines provided significant protection against development of persistently infected calves. And then the two modified live groups were different compared to the Virushield group in that they didn't have any PI calves in those two groups. And that's really the only paper that I was able to find that compared killed vaccines and modified live vaccines with unvaccinated controls directly in the same study under the same circumstances. We can find lots of other studies that are similarly designed, and they maybe look at one vaccine type compared to a control and then the other vaccine type compared to a control, but it's difficult to draw direct comparisons using those different studies because they're not going to be conducted under the same situations. They're not going to necessarily have the same challenge models. And so while we can get some information from those, it's kind of hard to look at those, you know, different studies for different types of vaccines and make direct comparisons to them as far as saying which vaccine type is better necessarily. So ideally, they would be compared in one study like this one, but it just isn't done very often. Another way that we can make a comparison of the two vaccine types is by looking at the labels and reading what the label says. So there are different labels that are going to be put on vaccine products. And as the companies get these approvals for these vaccines and the research that they use to get those approvals achieves these different levels of labeling. So the highest level is to say that a vaccine can prevent infection. That means it stops the host animal from getting any infection of the challenging organism. The next tier down is prevention of disease, so they get infected, but they don't have any clinical disease. And then next is AIDS and disease prevention, and then finally AIDS and disease control. And so this is sort of a tier of effectiveness based on what was submitted to USDA for licensing of the product, with the prevention of infection being the highest and AIDS and disease control being sort of the lowest. And so when you read a vaccine label, if you want to compare vaccine A and vaccine B, and you read the label and you see differences in how they're labeled based on this tier of labeling, that can give you an idea, at least based on the data that was submitted to get those labels, how their efficacy may compare to one another. But again, those trials are going to be conducted under different circumstances, so they're not necessarily directly comparable, but that's about the best way we have to assess the differences. The vaccine, the question about vaccine timing arises. So when are we going to give vaccination? We're going to talk about that some more when we get to the efficacy and safety stuff that we're going to cover. But we're usually going to be talking about either giving them pre-breeding or we're going to be giving them during pregnancy. One of those two times if we're going to be administering vaccines to cows. Hopefully we have a fairly short window of time when our cows are open, from when they calve until they're pregnant again. And so somewhere in there is going to be our pre-breeding vaccine. And then any other time of the year that we're going to give vaccine, if it's not in that window, hopefully the cows are going to be pregnant. So we're going to be administering vaccine in these two time frames. So what are the advantages and disadvantages to doing that? Well, from an immunity standpoint, those pre-breeding vaccines are optimum because they provide us the highest level of immunity during the period when the cattle are at greatest risk for reproductive loss. Most of the infectious agents that we're vaccinating against cause reproductive loss early in pregnancy. And so if we give our vaccines pre-breeding, then we have our highest level of protection during that period of highest risk. And if we are concerned about abortions caused by a vaccine, we don't have to worry about that if we're giving them pre-breeding because we're giving them to cattle when they're not pregnant. The problem with pre-breeding vaccines, though, is that they may require, depending on the management system used in the herd, it may require additional handling of those animals. So we may not be running those cattle through a chute at that time, and so we may have to vaccinate them or handle them an extra time. Or the question will come up a little bit later on about, you know, if we're doing some of the fixed-time AI things or that we've synchronization that we've been talking about this morning, administering vaccines at that time. And that may not always be a good idea, depending on the situation. So if we're going to give pre-breeding vaccines, we may have to back up a little further and handle those cattle again. So that's one disadvantage to giving pre-breeding vaccination. And if we're going to do it during pregnancy, that can minimize some of the additional animal handling, because hopefully most of our cattle are going to be handled sometime during pregnancy in order to have a pregnancy evaluation and pregnancy check. So if we can vaccinate them then, that saves handling them again. We might miss the period of highest risk because we're going to be vaccinating them somewhere in mid-gestation, most likely with beef cattle, and it's going to be quite a while before they're back in early pregnancy again. They're going to have to finish gestation of this calf, conceive with another calf, and then be, you know, several months down the road before they're in that period where we have the highest risk. Several of the vaccines on the market, they do have long-duration immunity labels. Both killed and modified live products have 12-month duration of immunity labels. Some of them do. So if we're utilizing those products, then maybe this is not as much of a risk. With killed products during pregnancy, we really don't have much of a risk of abortion. The question is there that risk there with modified live products? And we'll talk about that coming up. So that's one thing we have to consider if we're going to give vaccines during pregnancy, is what is the risk of causing an abortion? And the only other reason that I'm aware of to give them during pregnancy is maybe we're going to enhance colostral immunity because we're giving them closer to the time when that cow is going to be producing colostrum, so she may put more antibody into the colostrum for the calf. So I want to show you a few slides to look at what are the efficacy of currently available vaccines against bovine herpes virus, and then we'll show a few for BVD virus as well. In this first study, we compared VirusShield, which again is an inactivated vaccine, to a non-vaccinated control group. And these cattle were challenged with BHV or IBR at around 180 days of gestation. So they were vaccinated pre-breeding, got pregnant, and then challenged at about 180 days of gestation. And you can see the results there where all of the controls aborted. So a very severe challenge where all 14 of the control animals aborted and 3 of the 21 VirusShield cattle aborted. very significant difference in the BioReshield product provided, you know, 87% protection against IBR abortion in that study. The next one is a modified live product. The Express products are modified live, and they gave one group a pre-breeding vaccine that was 13 months, ended up being, based on timing, 13 months prior to the challenge. And then the other group got a pre-breeding vaccine that was 8 months prior to challenge, and then a non-vaccinated control group. And so this sort of gives you an idea of efficacy as well as duration of immunity in this study. And you can see group one, which were vaccinated 13 months prior to challenge, had one abortion out of seven. Group two, the 8 months prior to challenge group, had three. And there was no difference between those two statistically. And then group three, or the non-vaccinated controls, all but one of those animals aborted post-IBR challenge. Another study looking at the Express product, they gave two doses pre-breeding. So the previous one just gave one. This is giving two compared to non-vaccinated control. And then these cattle were exposed to PI steers. So this is kind of a combination BVD and IBR study. So they exposed them during pregnancy to PI steers, so they're being exposed to BVD. And then subsequently, later in gestation, exposed them to animals that were acutely infected with IBR. So they were animals that were shedding IBR virus, and exposed these pregnant heifers to those as well. As far when for the animals that aborted, none of the vaccinates aborted, and 4 out of 10 control animals aborted after the IBR challenge. And then if you look at what the results for the persistent BVD infection were post-calving, none of the vaccinates produced a PI calf, whereas all of the controls produced a PI calf. So pretty dramatic differences in both abortion rate and persistent infection development in that study. Then this one is looking at BVD. So we're going to switch gears a little bit and look at BVD efficacy. Cattle Master Gold product is a product that contains a chemically altered IBR, so it's a modified live IBR. But it only replicates in the nasal passages where it's cooler. It doesn't replicate in other body areas where it's warmer. And then it has a killed BVD, so it's a little bit of a unique product. Two doses pre-breeding versus no vaccination, and exposed to PI animals again during gestation. And then they harvested these fetuses by C-section at around 150 days of gestation. And see the results there. There were 4 out of the 15 vaccinates were PI, so a little higher rate than some of the other studies, but all of the controls were persistently infected. So a significant difference there, even though the PI rate was a little bit higher in the vaccinates, it's still significantly different than the control animals. This particular study was a little bit different in that it was utilizing BovaShield, which is a modified live product. BovaShield contains BVD1A and BVD2A, so those are the types of the strains, so to speak, of BVD virus. They exposed those pregnant cattle to PI animals, but those PI animals were infected with a different strain of BVD. So part of the goal was to see, okay, is that vaccine protective when the challenge comes from a different strain of BVD than what they were vaccinated with? And they harvested fetuses around 5 to 6 months of gestation, and there were 6 PI animals out of 40 in the vaccinated groups, and all of the control animals, all 8 of the controls were PI. So a significant difference there. So this is not 100% like maybe it's in the previous study that we looked at, but they were challenged with a virus that was of a different strain than the one they were vaccinated against. So there was at least some cross protection there, whereas all the controls were PI. And then this one was interesting, and I just included it because of the duration issue. Again, it was with BovaShield. These were intranasal challenge. They were not a PI exposure challenge. But they were challenged 370 days post-vaccination. So they vaccinated them, bred cows, and then they were, when those cows were somewhere between 60 and 90 days of gestation, and they were 370 days post-vaccination, so they were over a year since they had been vaccinated, challenged them with BVD, and they challenged some with BVD1 and some with BVD2. and you can see the results where there were no PI animals in the vaccinated groups, and virtually all the controls delivered PI calves. This should be the last one in this group. We've looked at it already. This is the one that compared the three different vaccines together, and just because it did include BVD, I wanted to show it to you again here. We've seen those results already. So what about safety of these products? Okay. Safety is a big issue. Is that 30 minutes? Are we all the way there? I haven't buzzed yet, but okay, all right. Sorry, I was waiting for the buzzer. But safety is a concern in terms of BVD, and I'll just kind of go through this fairly quickly, and again, I can get you the results. But there are documented effects of live IBR virus having negative effects on ovaries when they're given to non-immune animals, and that's what these two SHUT studies demonstrate here. So we can look back at the previous studies that we've looked at and see that there's pretty good safety data when we give those products, those modified live products, according to the labels, from giving them pre-breeding. So if we're giving pre-breeding modified live products and we're giving them according to the label, which most of them are going to say 28 days pre-breeding, there's pretty good evidence that that's pretty safe. When we give them closer to breeding than that is when we get into an area of question. So when we're giving them to extra in an extra label manner, either closer to breeding or to non-immune animals, what is the safety risk there? This is Dr. Perry's study, and he already kind of covered it this morning, so I won't go into too much detail with it, but it did show a significant reduction in fertility in animals that got a modified live vaccine at the beginning of a fixed-time DAI protocol, which would have been 8 days prior to insemination, compared to animals that got a killed vaccine or no vaccine at all. And that difference persisted out beyond that initial estrus cycle, in that, and this shows you the effects of those modified live cattle having a shorter estrus cycle, meaning they came back into heat more quickly, or never achieved pregnancy based on progesterone concentrations. So pretty good evidence that given this to non-immune cattle, these cattle were all seronegative or non-immune to IBR, that close to breeding had a negative impact on their fertility. The only other published study that I could find that looked at giving modified lives that close to breeding is this one here, and it was with the Vista products, and these were in vaccinated animals, so everybody had been vaccinated previously. Then the control group here got a revaccination about 40 days pre-breeding, which would be consistent with the label. And then the test group got a vaccine 3 days pre-breeding. So when it was given with the prostaglandin shot of their synchronization protocol. And my slide messed up there. This is supposed to be shifted over here, but basically there was no difference in reproductive success in those. So the difference between this and Dr. Perry's study is these animals were previously vaccinated and presumed to be immune when they got that pre-breeding vaccine, where they were not immune in Dr. Perry's study. And then this is some unpublished data that Dr. Paul Walls from Auburn presented at a meeting this past summer. Similar sort of setup comparing vaccinates and controls, giving that, these so they were all vaccinated and then revaccinated just prior to breeding, and compared to, they're not unvaccinated, this is just a Vibrio lepto product, so no virus in that product. And there was no difference in those as well. So no adverse effects given that modified live close to breeding in vaccinated animals. Just a couple slides on issues of safety and entering pregnancy, and then we'll be done. There are three or four or five different modified live products that have pregnant cow labels, and all of those have safety trials that are available to pull up in order to get those labels. Here's an example of one where there was one abortion in each group compared in vaccinates versus controls. So this is the Cattle Master Fusions, the modified live IBR product. I'm not even sure it's on the market anymore. And then non-vaccinated controls. So no difference there when they were vaccinated previously prior to breeding. There's several studies here. This was the safety study by Ellsworth. No difference again in no abortions in the vaccinated groups compared to significant abortions in the control groups. So showing that giving vaccine during pregnancy did not cause abortion in these studies. These are several field trials in that same paper from Ellsworth, where they compared vaccine during pregnancy to no vaccine during pregnancy in previously vaccinated animals, and there was no difference in abortion rate in those groups. This is where it gets interesting, and I'll wrap up with this slide, because this is the most, kind of the strongest evidence in my mind of where there might be a concern of causing abortion risk when modified lives are given to pregnant animals when they've been previously vaccinated according to label. So we know if we give those products and animals have not been previously vaccinated, we can cause a problem. But this case report from the University of Wyoming demonstrated a significant abortion issue in heifers that had been previously vaccinated according to label directions, and then they were vaccinated during pregnancy and experienced significant abortion. So this is not a challenge study. There were no controls. This is just a case report of what happened in one herd. But it certainly gives pause and makes you want to stop and think about, you know, what went on here. They did not determine whether the vaccine virus and the virus isolated from abortions was the same, but it was IBR. And then this does demonstrate a temporal relationship, but it's not necessarily a cause and effect relationship. So, you know, don't interpret this as necessarily being a cause and effect relationship, but it certainly does make you stop and think a little bit about this. So I'm not sure, you know, how you explain this one. So based on safety studies, you know, for the products to get labels, it appears that they're safe when given according to label directions. This one at least does provide some evidence there may be some concerns in some situations based on this one study. So I'll end it there. Sorry for going a little bit over, and I'll be happy to visit with you more or answer any questions this evening.